Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Kiva Huomenda, and welcome to Finland's favorite Mets podcast, The Metrospective, now charting all over Northern Europe, according to one random website I found. I'm Ted Berg. I'm joined today, as always, on the line by Tim Britton, The Athletic's Mets beat writer, also The Metrospective's Mets beat writer. Tim, how's it going?
You didn't prep me. I would have looked up a cool other language to start in. I wasn't ready for that.
Well, I can actually throw you a bone here because what I said, Hiva Huomenda, probably not pronounced right, and on account of there's multiple umlauts in there, that's good morning in Finnish. But it turns out the word for hello in Finnish is just hey.
Hey, what's up?
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
I started every instant message of my life in Finnish then.
Well, it's actually H-E-I. So unless it was like you were slamming on the keypad, probably not. I was thinking that once when the pandemic is over, hopefully by then we will be big enough that maybe we could like do a Metrospective world tour and just like hit Finland and Norway and Ecuador. Apparently now, according to this one chart website that I don't know if I trust, we're doing pretty well in Ecuador, and I'd love to check that out. I'm thinking like we could have. Like one of these concerts you see in Brazil where like a million people show up and then it's just you and me on a stage talking about like the Mets offseason acquisitions.
We can hit up the O'Leary's Boston sports bar chain that is popular in Norway and Sweden.
Huh. Who knew? I guess you did because you've been to Norway. We know this.
We've discussed this already.
A big Scandinavian guy, yeah. As discussed. I would like to discuss that more because I'm really eager to discuss anything but the Mets series in Chicago.
Well, they've gotten a taste of the cold Northern Europe weather.
There you go. There's
the last
a segue.
Week. Sure. The Mets got swept at Wrigley Field. They've been terrible at Wrigley Field outside of a two-game stretch in October of 2015. Really dating back to like 2003, the record I think SNY was talking about it all series. They're like 15-40 at Wrigley.
That two game stretch in 2015 though was pretty satisfying. And I'll tell you, I sometimes in the press box you get obviously I was a bit of a homer in the press box, but not vocally. I'm not rooting for the I'm deep in my heart as a national baseball writer rooting for the Mets in 2015. In part because it means that I will continue the postseason sleeping in my own bed, but also because it's the Mets. But I'm not, I can be professional about things. Whereas I was sitting in the Wrigley Field aux box for that series between two Chicago radio producer guys who were just like openly rooting for the Cubs. And it was so fun to just smugly sit there and watch the Cubs lose those games.
So yeah, they picked the right two to play well.
But these three, no.
Yeah, and it you know, you can take away different things from this series. I think we'll probably talk a lot about the defense is the big issue, especially those first two games. But the middle game in particular, the middle innings of the middle game were really a kind of farce for the Mets defensively. The other thing is that you realize how much they've been really leaning on that starting pitching early in the season. Like, they scored 8 runs in this series and lost all 3. They scored 8 runs in Denver in Coors Field and won 2 out of 3. And that's because you had Jacob deGrom striking out just about everyone on Saturday in the first game. And then you had Marcus Stroman with a great outing on Sunday going 8 innings. So when you've got deGrom and Stroman pitching that way, you can get by scoring 8 runs in the series when none of your starters last through the 4th inning the way they did in Chicago, in part because of that defense, then you're going to get swept scoring 8 runs.
And, you know, and we're going to get to the defense because that's a big and important thing to talk about at this juncture of the season, I think. And you had a great column about it. But the poor defense and the starting pitchers not escaping the 4th also then exposes what we already knew was a very soft underbelly of the bullpen. And you saw it in the middle game of the series when that game just sort of spiraled out of control. No one could get anybody out. Poor Trevor Hildenberger kind of had to wear one there, and then wound up getting sent to the alternate site the very next day. And so, for as sunny as we were about the on-field Mets last time we spoke, it's almost as if it's still April.
Yeah, and it's funny because that soft underbelly, like you're playing around with different roles. Like Trevor Hildenberger is the guy who gave up the grand slam on Wednesday to Javi Baez. He did not pitch particularly well that day. Robert Gazelman didn't have a great day that day. And then Sean Reed Foley pitches the way he did on Thursday, retiring all 9 batters he faced. And, you know, your long relief looks great moving forward, as long as you go with Reed Foley rather than the other guys. You know, that's kind of where you're cycling through different people to see what mix works in your bullpen. And, you know, outside of Gazelman and Hildenberger, it's pitched pretty well the last, really since opening day. The main guys in the Mets bullpen, May, Castro, Loop, and Diaz, have pitched well. They've allowed, like, the free runner in extra innings to score and not much else. Loop pitching around the leadoff triple on Thursday night. I do want to say there were a lot of Mets fans who were like mad that Aaron Loop pitched that inning or started that inning against Jake Mariznick. And I thought that was okay. Because if you go to Castro there, you get Hayward and Sogard as your pinch hitters. And then you get Ian Happ batting from his better side, the left side. Mm-hmm. If you go with Loop, you get Jake Mariznick and Austin Romine and Ian Happ batting from his worst side, the right side. I know, you know, you might say, like, well, you're not really scared of Jason Hayward and Eric Sogard as pinch hitters. I don't think you should be that scared of Jake Mariznick from the right side. So I was okay with Luis Rojas doing that.
I mean, it's tough to figure out what buttons to push when it seems like a bunch of the buttons are broken.
Yeah, that's when there aren't, like, great options. I thought neither of those was a bad option. It was not worth getting worked up over, in my mind. But do you want to talk about actual errors?
Yeah, I did want to just hit on the Reed Foley thing, because that was, I thought, if there was one bright spot to this entire series, it was getting 3 strong innings out of an unknown quantity in Reed Foley. And he's an intriguing guy. If you look back through his stats, like, there's promise there. He's always struck out a ton of batters. He's had some success in the minors, some rocky seasons. His last one with the Blue Jays was sort of nightmarish. But it seems like, and we both know better than to read too much into 3 innings, but there was a particularly strong 3 innings, and at least you can hope, like, okay, maybe this is a hot hand they can ride for a little while.
Yeah, it's a nice data point. It's one data point, but it's still a nice one to have. And this is a guy who was a pretty well-regarded prospect for some period of time with Toronto. So if he can, you know, if moving to the bullpen more permanently helps him, you know, find his command a little bit, that's always been the issue, right, is the walks. If he's able to do that, then, you know, the stuff plays a little bit differently when he's not working through an extra batter per inning on the bases.
Right, and I think, you know, we've seen, obviously, time and again that guys can improve a lot upon moving to the bullpen, depending on that stuff. You can use fewer of whatever pitch it is that you can't get over the plate. You don't need as much if you're only facing a guy once in a game. And And on top of that, I think, you know, there's a case to be made at this point that, you know, AAA pitchers, by and large, have like all of the physical tools for major league success. And sometimes you just need like the right voice in your ear and the right game plan or whatever that is to make everything click. And I think, you know, based on the one outing, and again, one outing, we can kind of hope like maybe, hey, maybe this guy, everything's going to click for this guy and you'll get that nice long relief season. But what I think is not something that leaves a lot of Mets fans hopeful right now is that defense. And your column at The Athletic is a great one. It's a good one to read, in that it reminds us that this is by design.
Yeah, like, you know, we're 14 games into the season and there's a lot of small sample weirdness that you can kind of dismiss with some, you know, your favorite song.
Right. I would say you could dismiss Luis Guillorme's two errors, right? Like those, that's a defensive miscue that you can say, like, I'm not really worried about Guillorme moving forward.
Yeah. You know, like Wednesday we talked to Chili Davis, the hitting coach over Zoom, and he was like, he basically said, you know, just in my mind, it's just too early. And our schedule's been too disruptive to really worry too much about the offense. And I agree with him. It's 14 games. They've only played on three consecutive days twice, including this past series against Chicago. And they led the majors in batting average last season over a longer stretch of time. Maybe they're not quite as good as they were offensively last year in all situations except with runners in scoring position. But I don't think they're as bad as they are currently. I think they'll be a top 10 run scoring off. Well, you know, I don't know about the DH stuff. They'll be a top 5 run scoring team in the National League by the end of the season. Defensively, though, that is what we were genuinely concerned about heading into the season, was what they could do with their gloves. And JD Davis at third base was a big question mark. Dom Smith in left field, Brandon Nimmo in center. Nimmo's been fine, I think, in center. Smith has been pretty good in left. There haven't been too many glaring plays out there. Davis is under the spotlight, obviously, for the two errors on Tuesday, another one on Wednesday. Looked shaky on some other plays Wednesday. Really, the whole defense looked terrible on Wednesday. It wasn't just JD Davis, but he's the one that the Mets have kind of another option. You mentioned Guillorme. He played there Thursday night and made a sparkling play to start the game. You know, this is how the Mets have been built. They have chosen the bat over the glove at almost every position for a decade, basically. And this is what happens when you do that. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, if and when the offense does come around, how much do you still choose the bat at third base every day in JD Davis over the glove in Luis Guillorme?
Yeah, and I guess you could say that the good news with Davis is he has smoked the ball as a hitter. And so, you know, you are getting, and in that Wednesday night game at the beginning, he had, I believe he had given the Mets the lead. And then so it was like, you live by the JD Davis, you die by the JD Davis. And they died pretty hard at the hands of Davis's defense in that game. I thought that Gary Cohen made a good point in that broadcast, which was that, you know, I wonder if there's a case to be made that, you know, you don't, not looking at the opposing pitcher so much, because you can say, and Luis Rojas did in his decision to use Davis in Thursday's game, he said, you know, Davis does not have that stark platoon splits as a hitter. Whereas, you know, if the Mets have two lefties in their rotation and they have Stroman in their rotation, a guy who gets a lot of ground balls, you know, maybe you start looking at pitching matchups for when to give Guillorme a go at third base. Because I think with a lefty who's gonna yield some contact like Lucchesi, you probably want Guillorme out there.
Yeah, Lucchesi and Peterson are guys that generate more ground balls, especially to the right, to the left side of the infield, because you're gonna have a lot of right-handed batters facing them. So that would make sense. I think the Mets want to break those guys up in the rotation where they're not back-to-back the way they were this week. Mm-hmm. And they'll probably do that going forward. You know, I think the one issue you have with that is, okay, if you do that for Lucchesi and Peterson, maybe for Stroman, how do the other starters feel when you're not running those guys, the best defense out for them too? Because, you know, maybe JD Davis has a throwing error in a Jacob DeGrom start, or on Tuesday night, Walker start. You know,
let me have that conversation, because I feel like I could sell Jacob DeGrom on that, because you say, like, look, like, you strike everybody out. You strike everybody out. There's going to be at most, like, 3 ground balls to this guy, and most likely you're going to strike the next 2 batters out either. Everyone knows the issue is that the team doesn't hit for you, and this guy hits. So, you know, for you, you know, because you're special in so many ways, you get J.D. Davis out there, and it's not a bad thing. Right, it's not like he's not a major league player. He is a very good hitter who struggles at third base. Like you take the good with the bad, and I think I feel like I could sit down with Jacob deGrom and convince him it's the right move.
Yeah, I mean you could probably point out, like I just realized there have been 0 5-3 putouts in Jacob deGrom's 3 starts this year.
Right.
There have been a couple pop ups to third. That's basically what happens. Yeah, I think that's just the slippery slope you get on. But maybe it's not as big an issue for the Mets because you say, okay, we'll play our more defensive infield with Guillorme at third behind Lucchesi and Peterson. Those are the 2 guys who might not be long-term guys in your rotation this year. It might, you know, those if you're replacing people when Carrasco and Syndergaard come back, those are the 2 odd men out probably. And so that the problem kind of fixes itself, and then you can go back to playing Guillorme behind Stroman, or you can mix it up the way you want to. I think it's almost harder for them because Davis is one of the guys hitting to make him more of a switch now. But we've seen them in the past be pretty quick with their defensive decision making. Like last year, it was not this deep into the season when they decided Davis was their third baseman and Jeff McNeil was not, that they swapped them in third base and left field. That was pretty early in the season. That was a 60 game season, but still. They made that decision rather swiftly. I think it's, you know, Guillorme has done enough offensively. I think there are some people who think Guillorme will be as good offensively as Davis, and that's not my belief.
He can get on base. You know, he can get on base, but he does not hit for a lot of power. He does not do much else but get on base. And we don't know, you know, we can't say for sure that he's going to have like a, if you could say, oh, Luis Guillorme is going to get you like a 780 OPS with a, you know, an on-base heavy split, and you say, oh yeah, then every day you play. But can you say that confidently? Like he's hit okay. He's hit, you know, he hit well last season in a very, very small sample. He's had times at the minors that he got on base a lot, but it's not like this guy is a bat like Davis or with a track record like Davis's.
Yeah. So I think, you know, he's a different type of bat in that lineup. It's probably works against him that he's another left-handed bat rather than Davis, the righty who breaks up some of the lefties. Mm-hmm. But if the rest of this lineup is operating as you expected it to coming into the season, having Luis Guillorme batting 8th, between James McCann and the pitcher is not the worst thing in the world. They can get away with that. This isn't like the 2015 team at the start of the season where they needed every ounce of offense they could get, or team even like in 2018 where they just did not have enough offense in their lineup on a regular basis, and Luis Guillorme would have been batting, you know, 6th or something for them. The 2009 team, he probably would have been hitting cleanup at various stretches of that season.
He's the best hitter in the 2010 opening day lineup for sure.
So if the team plays the way it can, it's not just in a vacuum who's the better player all around, J.D. Davis or Luis Guillorme. It's who fits your team's strengths and weaknesses better. And if the team is hitting but not fielding, then it's probably Guillorme. If the team's still struggling to hit, then maybe you lean toward Davis for a little bit. But it does seem like if everything goes according to plan, you probably end up starting Guillorme a little bit more than you might have thought initially.
What about in the outfield? Do you think that there's any concern that maybe you want to give... and it's tough to know with Pilar what you're going to get defensively. Like, he's a guy with a great defensive reputation, but the stats don't really quite match it. Almora, on the other hand, it seems like he is the real deal as a center fielder, but not much of an offensive player. Do you still stick with this alignment of Nimmo playing center field for the overwhelming majority of the games with Dom Smith in left? We know that Conforto will be in right.
I think you're okay with it for now. I think Pilar has probably declined a little bit in center field. I think there's something to the defensive stats that have shown that over the last couple of years. I mean, he's been played in the corners by other baseball teams. You know, he was on the Red Sox last year. The Red Sox were run in part by the guy who now runs the Mets, Zach Scott. And they played him in right field. Right field's big in Fenway Park. You need a good defensive outfielder there. But they did not play him in center field much. So I think that tells you how they feel about him as a defender. Almora, we haven't seen at the plate, really. You know, like he hasn't started a game yet. He's only got a handful of at-bats, if that. So it's tough to say like what kind of player he can be for them. I think if everyone got through spring training healthy, you know, Almora might not be on the active roster. It might have been Jose Martinez there as a bat off the bench instead.
I forgot all about Jose Martinez. Thank you. I completely forgot that he is part of this team.
Yeah, and I think that's hurt a little bit of their pinch hitting prowess to have that right-handed bat off the bench. I think there's an example of where like the gap between Smith offensively and whoever would replace him, whether it's Pilar or Almora, is pretty significant. And I think, you know, you can get away with Nimmo and Smith there, given that offensive gap, in a way that you're probably less willing to at third base.
Moving back to the infield, and because you mentioned third base again, and just someone we hadn't mentioned, it's weird because it seems like he's a little bit of an afterthought on the roster, but he's had some big hits. And look at the back of the baseball card. Jonathan Villar, just 2 years ago, 2019, hey, had like an all-star caliber season for the Orioles. He was rough in 2020, but a lot of people were. He wasn't a big deal signing, but it's less than 30 plate appearances, so it's meaningless, but he has hit quite a bit like he did in 2019 to date this year. We know he brings an element of speed on the base paths that they don't have a ton of. He's a successful base stealer. He steals at a good clip. Is there a case for VR seeing more action?
You know, he's been fine at third base so far. That's a position he hadn't played in 5 years in the majors. And StatCast had him as, I think, the worst infielder in baseball last season.
How is it that the Mets always wind up with a guy when you're like the single worst at this thing defensively? It's always a Met.
Right, and that was at second base. That was at his better position. Yeah. I mean, it's a 60-game season. Defensive metrics in particular.
Defensive metrics. The StatCast ones seem a little bit more better for the small samples, but I would say defensive metrics, you kind of need like 3 years, certainly not 60 games.
Yeah, I mean, like the StatCast outs above average liked Davis at third base in 2019, for instance. They had him, I think, positive as a third baseman that year, while defensive run saved had him as one of the worst in baseball. And the two agreed that he was one of the worst in baseball in 2020 at third. So, you know, I tend to look at a couple different things. The defensive run save, we're not as harsh on VR. He's been fine at third base to this point, and he brings, it's certainly a different approach offensively than Guillorme, and probably one that the OPS is going to be higher at the end of the season. There's definitely more power. There's more speed on the bases. There's less on-base percentage, and it's a different kind of at-bat. Guillorme is the grinded out kind of at-bat, 22 pitches in a spring training game. And VR is going to strike out on 3 pitches with some regularity, but he's still probably going to be a better hitter overall. And if he's good, you know, he's not going to be a plus defender at third, but he can handle it. He might be the compromise candidate there at third base, depending on how your team is doing. So they've got these 3 different guys who fit 3 different niches at that position, and it gives them different ways to play around with it, but it's been tough for them to do so far because they're playing so few games that they haven't given anyone really extended run there yet.
Yeah, and that's a good point too. And I think that, you know, is something we can sort of use to write away some of the inconsistency in the rotation, a lot of the uncertainty in the bullpen is like, you know, we need more data on all of this stuff. And even if they played every game, you still wouldn't have enough of a sample to say, like, this guy's good in the bullpen, this guy's bad in the bullpen. But certainly after only 14 and especially with how start and stop it's been, you know, and you get, you mentioned Gazelman, who we didn't see for the first week of the season, week and a half of the season. Just so, you know, when DeGrom or Stroman pitches, they're not going to use the bullpen at all. And so, you don't have guys in any sort of, you know, regular routine. There's a lot that could unfold here because it's April 23rd.
Yeah, and that, like I don't think it's worth it being that harsh on the starters for this last series. They The thing that upsets you probably is some of the walks that they gave up. Whether it was Walker on Tuesday in the fourth inning,
there was some
walking
questionable.
In a run.
I don't know how much I'm biased by the stupid little strike zone thing, but it felt like there were some guys getting squeezed throughout that series.
Yeah, there were. It was Peterson against Rizzo on Wednesday night, where he threw like two pitches on the inner half of the plate. I don't even think they were inner third; they were inner half that he didn't get, and he walked him on four pitches, and then got through that inning, the rest of that inning fine, but then struggled, walked in a run a couple innings later. So you had Walker walk in a run, you had Peterson walk in a run, you had Lucchesi walk the pitcher in a spot where he shouldn't have. I enjoyed his matter of fact quote after the game, where someone, Steve Gelbs or someone had asked him about his outing, and he just goes, "Yeah, I messed up when I walked the pitcher. I shouldn't have done that."
you shouldn't. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that was a mistake. Like when players just come out and say that, it's hard to criticize them too much. They know what they did wrong too.
So, you've seen a baseball game before too, he's not an idiot. I guess guys sometimes do gloss over their mistakes, but you like an accountability like that.
Yeah, so and it's nice for the Mets that they, off of this series, you go into having DeGrom and Stroman the next 2 days, and you're not facing Scherzer and Strasburg with Washington. Strasburg's on the IL, you miss Scherzer all series. So that's the good news for their starting staff, but off of how well they pitched early the first couple times through, you're going to have nights where they don't survive the fourth inning. You just hope they don't stack up the way they did this past series.
We have a handful of questions. I solicited questions on Twitter right before we started the show, so I haven't even really vetted these or thought them through, and so I don't have an answer for this one. From @Dan.Lewis, Dan Lewis, also known from the great Now I Know newsletter, which I subscribe to and very much enjoy, trivia newsletter. Dan wants to know, what offseason move did the Mets not make that they really should have? And I mean framework-wise, like, quote, find a starter to play third base, or, quote, bring in at least one other relief pitcher, not a specific deal. Find a star to play third base is a really easy one to say now in retrospect. Like, especially, when we saw the cost of the Arenado deal, you could be like, well, that's the one. Why couldn't they have ponied up those prospects, that level of prospects and cash to bring in Nolan Arenado? Now, maybe that impacts their ability to re-sign Francisco Lindor and extend Michael Conforto and all these other things we want them to do, but... that's like the no-brainer one.
The specific one that I can think of along those lines was exploring someone like Marcus Semien, because that would be a right-handed hitting infielder who was available on a one-year deal. You could have said, as the Mets, this is our Robinson Cano money going to someone else on the infield this year. When Cano comes back onto the payroll in 2022, we no longer have this guy on our team. We give Semien the 1 year pillow contract. I believe he got, was it 1 year and 18 with Toronto, or 1 year and 16, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds right. And he's a good player for that deal.
So I thought that was a guy you can play him at third base or second base, depending on what he was comfortable with and what Jeff McNeil was comfortable with. He fit your lineup pretty well. Could be as good as Davis offensively, a different style profile, probably has a higher ceiling offensively off of what he did in 2019. Davis
was
then...
He was an MVP runner-up, right? Like, he was an MVP finalist in 2019.
Yeah, finished third. And really, if you throw out a really horrific 2 or 3 weeks to start 2020, was really good the rest of that season and into the playoffs for Oakland. So I thought he was a guy who made sense on a short-term basis to be on your infield. That would have, I don't know if they had signed him early, how that impacts the rest of their offseason in terms of where they are with the competitive balance tax and all that. I think you can go over the competitive balance tax if you're in it to win it. And I thought he was a guy that made a lot of sense to me. I haven't actually looked at what he's done with the Blue Jays so far this year playing second base. I liked that idea at the start of the offseason.
I think I'm going to steal yours, actually. Dan asked us for a framework, and we did him better. I would say Yeah, that is a good specific example of a move the Mets could have made. I think that you have done a much better job than me of considering the handedness of the hitters. But yeah, having that righty bat and a guy who he hasn't done much for Toronto yet, but I think a guy who will hit quite a bit better and we know can play really, really good defense on the infield at this point in his career would have been a nice guy to have.
Yeah, and you know, we could talk about another reliever. Would have helped. Another reliever would always help. They could have signed. They could have signed a. You know, if they had signed Brad Hand and Brad Hand's pitching well, and Dan asked us this question anyway, I would have said, yeah, another reliever probably could have helped. So, like, you can sign. You know, think you can always use another guy in your bullpen. Certainly not having Seth Lugo early in the season reaffirms that. But I think the bullpen has. You know, it's basically cost them what the one game on opening day when May and Loop had kind of a nightmarish eighth inning in Philly. Outside of that, it's been pretty good. You know, you've got to be happy with how Edwin Diaz has pitched for the most part, despite giving up the free runner on Thursday night. May has looked better. Castro has been probably the most pleasant surprise in the bullpen if you're thinking back to the start of spring training and how he's pitched. So, you know, the bullpen and the starting rotation, the pitching staff as a whole has been better than I would have suspected given the injuries that they're dealing with at this point in the season.
They are coming home for a series with the Nationals, starting out, as you referenced, with Jacob deGrom. A game, no game is a must win in April. I would say this is a game they really, really want to win, right? Sitting at 7-7, facing a Washington team that's starting to crawl out from its rough start, a beatable pitcher with their ace on the mound after a demoralizing series in Chicago. Are you ready to call it a must win?
No, I don't
good,
call things
because that would
wins.
Be wrong. There's no such thing as that in baseball until it's Game 7 of the World Series or Game 7 of your the elimination game is a must win, and other than that, there's no must win.
But as a sign of kind of where Jacob deGrom is in terms of his performance currently, so like we're recording this on Friday morning. I am getting the second dose of my vaccine on Friday afternoon, so my plan is really to not cover the Friday night game. It's kind of a night off for me. But my editor, when we discussed this plan earlier in the week and the Mets had moved DeGrom to Friday, we had to make a no-hitter contingency plan, which, you know, the Mets don't throw those very often. But we still had to have, just in case, you know, just in case something wild happens with DeGrom. What is our coverage plan? Can I be on top of that? So hopefully, in the event that does happen, I will be fine physically to cover a no-hitter. Covering a Mets no-hitter would be very fun. But that is how good DeGrom is. That, like, every time out there, I don't know about you when you watch him, Ted, every time out there, he throws, like, this ridiculous first inning. And you're like, this might be it. This could be the no-hitter game. Let's look at that other lineup. You know, the Rockies lineup isn't that good. It's seven innings. This could be it. And then he usually gives up a hit in the second inning.
Every time he pitches, you know, it's not even, you expect something special, maybe not a no hitter, but it's like, oh, if he doesn't strike out 14 guys, I'm disappointed. You know, it's absurd how good he's been. Are you missing this game because you're fearing the side effects or are you planning to hit up the dance clubs? Oh, now fully vaccinated Tim Britton out and about in the world.
You know, I'm going to give that the 2 weeks that they say.
Yeah, that's right. Good.
You know, I'm going to be responsible.
My
wife works in science, so she has been on top of this from the very start. It's been very helpful.
I got a scientist at home too. It's sometimes good, sometimes bad. You know, like sometimes I just want to spew some pseudoscience, and she's always ready to call me out on it.
So we'll see how it goes, but I should be okay. Just in case. Jacob deGrom decides to make this the night he throws a no-hitter.
Well, if he does, we will certainly be discussing it later. I guess early next week. I forgot what day it is. If you have questions for the Metrospective podcast, please, whether you're coming from Sweden or Norway, not seeing a lot of action in Denmark yet. So if you're out there in Denmark, we would love to hear from you and have you tell your friends. But or even if you're in the New York, New Jersey metro area, we would love your questions. I'm at you can email at askTedBerg@gmail.com. You can hit us on Twitter. I'm at OGTedBerg. Tim is at Tim Britton. We will be back next week to discuss whatever happens in this Mets series in Washington. Hopefully sunnier times to talk about. Tim, as always, thank you for participating in the Metrospective podcast today.
Yeah, tell me how good O'Leary's is. I only had it once in the Oslo airport, and I don't really remember it being memorable. So let me know if I should have gone to the one in Tromsø.
So there's none in Boston. It's just a Boston-themed chain in Northern Europe, in Scandinavia?
Yeah, like I was in the Oslo airport once for a layover and walking around trying to find some place to eat. And I was like, oh, sports bar, that works. And you open up the walls were just decorated with Boston athletes. And you open up the menu and it's like, you can get the Eucalyptus burger or the Tom Brady burger. And this is while I was living in Boston and I found it very strange. And I found out that it was... a chain that was in multiple locations. And then when my wife and I were in Tromsø a year and a half ago, there was one right downtown there as well.
I'm going to assume it's owned by Troy O'Leary, former Red Sox outfielder. I don't think it is. Don't look that up.
The guy who always gets overlooked when people talk about the Pedro Martinez 6 no-hit innings in the 99 ALDS.
Absolutely. I would love to further explore themed restaurants that seem far out of place, but I think we should probably wrap it up there.
Adios.
Peace out.